Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Sarah Pearson. She is joining us again for her second novel. This one is called The Retreat. It is brand new. It is available everywhere. And we talked to her last year for The Sanatorium, which was a fantastic one of those closed-setting mystery thriller novels. And The Retreat is something along the same lines with mostly different characters. But Sarah, set this one up for us because you've found a niche in this genre, and I loved it a second time around.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this is another sort of Ellen Warner detective novel, but it can be definitely read as a standalone. So The Retreat set in a luxe wellness retreat on a remote island off the South Devon coast. But the island has a little bit of a dark past. It is home to a serial killer, and it's kind of rumoured to be cursed. We have Ellen sort of back from her career break in the role again, and she faces a little bit of an uncomfortable case when she finds a body on the rocks below the yoga pavilion at this wellness retreat, and she soon finds that things aren't quite what they seem.
You know, this idea of a place where it used to be, your previous novel is The Sanatorium. This one is now about a place that used to be a home for boys. Colson Whitehead did a book about that, a different type of a story, but nonetheless, this whole idea about a home for essentially wayward boys from way back when, with all the stories and mysteries and horrors that happened there. When you dove into this, Colson's book was tough for me to read. The parts about the wayward home, the home for wayward boys was tough for me to read. Is that hard to write about as a writer for the experience that the boys who would have been there, I know it's fiction, but the ones that would have suffered there?
Yeah, definitely. And it's actually, even though obviously the book is fiction and I've taken a kind of fictionalized sort of version of an account, it actually happened not very far from where I live, something directly inspired by this sort of, as you mentioned, home for wayward boys. And yeah, I think in the present we find it really weird to look sort of back at the past and see what was kind of acceptable then. And it was extremely hard. I read lots of sort of first-hand accounts of boys that were kind of in those homes and more or less left to their own devices. And almost unbelievable how the teachers themselves weren't kind of policed in any way. They were free to sort of dole out discipline. So yeah, those scenes were very hard to write.
Your accent obviously gives it away. You're from the UK. And can you kind of set up the area where this is? Because the area becomes its own character in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on the South Devon coast, so very, very sort of far south in the UK, right on the sea. And this island is a little few miles out from the mainland. The island where the book is based, that I've based the book on, is quite close, but I've sort of set it sort of more remotely. And there's lots of myths and folklore in this area, and it's sort of a very atmospheric place. It sort of really lent itself as a setting for the book. I love books where the sort of setting itself, as you mentioned, kind of very much becomes a character, and hopefully that comes across in the book.
Ellen is now back working as a detective, although it's she's got a desk job. She's not on the case just yet or on the working right. And so as I read this, I assume that in future books we'll get to the point where she's back working just normal. But when you go back and try this, she had suffered tragedy, and so she had to take some time off on the sanatorium, and so she wasn't really working at all, and now she's just kind of getting her foot back in the water. When you do this, is this almost incorporating a backstory to what the detective she could be, incorporating a backstory into these last two books?
Yeah, definitely. I think Ellen as a character, she's someone that sort of very much carries her sort of past with her, and I think that sort of influences very much what she's sort of doing within the book. And it's something that sort of backstory is carrying into sort of the third book as well, and almost becomes a sort of secondary plot line. I think Ellen as a person, you very much sort of see her past come to the fore, and it sort of challenges her in ways that perhaps other detectives we don't quite see. And I think also her interplay with sort of relationships with other characters in the novel that follow through in both books sort of add to that plot as well.
I would think that as you write a book with a closed universe, you've got a limited number of characters, I would think the conventional wisdom is, well, it's easy. You don't have to worry about all the secondary characters that come into play. But, you know, as I think about it, it's probably more difficult because your backstories of the characters, the stuff we don't even read about that influences how they behave, that's got to be more difficult than it would be if you were doing a normal detective book where somebody's on the streets and investigating a murder.
Yeah, absolutely. You aren't able to sort of have someone, as you say, on the street kind of investigating and kind of going along in real time in that way. So you very much have to evolve those sort of backstories ahead of time and then make sure those kind of weave throughout the novel to sort of reach a climax at the end. But it can be quite tricky. I have to say, I do lots of sort of plotting and planning to get to that stage.
how do you walk the line of putting too much backstory in versus just enough so the reader understands what's going on?
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually, and it's really hard because I think you get to know the characters so well, but that you really do want to sort of input as much as possible. But I think there comes a point when you sort of take time away from the book. I definitely had points where there was probably a little too much in there, and I kind of had to get out the editing pen and sort of strip away what's really essential for the reader. But yeah, I think it's important to have that backstory there, but know sort of when to stop. I think with Ellen and with Hannah, she's one of the other sort of narrators of the novel. We see the book from her point of view, who's a guest at the retreat. That backstory is very important. But yeah, just making sure the plot is moving forward at all times. So I think it's good to take a little sort of space away from the book and then come back and edit afterwards.
Part of the book is narrated in the form of a blog, of a Twitter type of a blog, and when you do that, you have to change your voice to a certain type of writing because people don't write on Twitter or on social media the way that they do, the way that they speak or the way a narrator would speak. Yeah. So how did you change your voice in your own mind to get that down? Because the voice on social media is a very distinct voice.
Yeah, it really is, actually. That's not something actually someone's asking for. It's a really good question. I think on social media, people definitely almost have a persona. And I think I did a little bit of time sort of looking. One of my characters is almost like a travel influencer, I suppose you'd describe it. And I kind of did a bit of research of how sort of they speak and how they sort of almost do their sort of pieces to camera via sort of TikTok or Instagram. And it's sort of immersing myself into that language, kind of quite upbeat. You're trying to very much as an influencer bring the audience along with you. So I try to incorporate that, but yeah, it's a very different style to how I'd narrated the rest of the novel.
Well, and then when you have a narrator on social media as well, I always joke that if people's lives were half as happy as they seem to be on social media, the counselors and psychiatrists would all be out of business. And so is a social media narrator even less reliable than a normal narrator in a book?
Yeah, definitely. I think you really do have to take with a sort of pinch of salt in a way, I think, what you see on social media. And I think you can definitely sort of play with that within the narrative. I think on any kind of social media platform, as I said, people are kind of almost performing to a degree. And I think as a reader, you kind of almost have to be acutely aware of that. And that probably adds a whole new layer to the narrative itself.
I'm chatting with Sarah Pierce, whose brand new novel is called The Retreat. It is available everywhere. Her previous book, The Sanatorium, was a New York Times bestseller, and it was also a Reese's Book Club pick. Sarah, the sophomore effort for any writer, I think, is probably the most difficult. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you wrote your first book in a bubble, and it took off. It just went off like gangbusters. Now you've got everybody waiting, and the expectations are through the roof for you. So what does that do to you as a writer when you are putting together a second book with the expectations so high based on the success of the Sanatorium?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. I was writing this book during the pandemic as well, which was a really quite a novel experience, writing in lockdown with sort of two children at home as well. So that sort of added to it. But I think the only thing you can do is kind of almost just write the story for you. But you're right, that kind of first book is very much written in the bubble. You don't have the sort of pressure of a deadline. So yeah, I kind of very much sort of felt the pressure sort of weighing on my back, but hopefully sort of readers will enjoy. Yeah, it's a tricky one, the sophomore novel.
I see different books in this Reese's Book Club thing, Reese Witherspoon. Do you know her? Does she contact you? How does that work when you become part of that community?
Yeah, you very much kind of a part of Reese's Book Club. So you have Reese and then her kind of team around her. And I did actually sort of have a brief Zoom chat with Reese when she was introducing her sort of new app to readers. So yeah, there's sort of definitely contact with Reese and the wider team. And what's so lovely is you almost become an alumni. So it's very much sort of treated as the alumni sort of author association. So the team is constantly in touch, kind of putting other authors in touch with each other, promoting each other's work. So yeah, it feels a very special club to be a part of.
She's definitely an A-list celebrity in the United States, but I would think in the UK, you know, I can't probably name you a celebrity from the UK being an American citizen. And so is she a big deal in the UK?
Yeah, she definitely is. And I would particularly say amongst kind of social media and kind of what we describe as sort of bookstagrammers or book talk, I think Reese sort of transcends probably geography. And I think for me with the Sanatorium, that's one of the biggest things that kind of came out of it. Obviously, it gave me huge exposure in the US, which was genuinely amazing. But kind of all over the world, I took part in book clubs in India, obviously here in the UK. So while we do have our own book clubs, I think Reese kind of sort of very much cuts through with everyone. I know a lot of UK readers follow her book club on Instagram and have the app. So yeah, it's a big deal here as well.
When you were writing The Sanatorium and you know, it's your first effort for a published, well, maybe not your first effort, but nonetheless, your first published novel, a thriller. Mm. Is the whole idea to get it sold in the United States, is that the goal, or is that just something that happened? Would you have been happy just selling the book in the UK?
Absolutely. I think as a debut, genuinely, I was probably one of those authors that almost just wanted one reader to read my book. I mean, the goal is to get an agent and then to get a publisher, but I really didn't have an eye on the US, and it's not something sort of definitely here in the UK that your publisher sort of makes a big deal about. I think the kind of books are submitted, and if that happens, great. But no, it wasn't something that I felt was sort of, a must-have. It was something I sort of dreamt of, but I didn't imagine it would happen, so it's the hugest thrill that it has.
While both countries speak the English language, are there any nuances in the narrative when the U.S. version comes out that have been changed from the U.K. just because of geographical differences?
Yeah, not so much nuances. It's definitely the language. There's always sort of surprises. I think one of the words I used here in the U.K. when someone is coming up to an exam, we'd say we're revising. And I think that's not a phrase that's used in the US. I think you kind of would just say studying. So there's lots of language differences, and I suppose perhaps cultural references that need to be explained. But I think one of the things my editor's sort of keen on, if it is a UK kind of cultural reference, she'll keep that in, because obviously the book is set in the UK. And then perhaps it's something that a reader sort of may look up afterwards. But I think it's sort of keeping it authentically rooted in the country it was written in.
You're now a mega published superstar in the publishing world, in the literary world. Going back to your creative writing training, are there things that you took out of that you've used as you've gone forward, or has this mostly been a baptism by fire for you? This is nothing like you expected when you were going through your formal training.
That's a really good question. It's probably a bit of both. I think a baptism of fire in terms of, I don't think when you're sort of doing my creative writing degree, you know really how publishing works. So in terms of deadlines, in terms of how much the sort of author gets involved in the process, all of that is new. But I think one of the biggest things I took out of the course was writing to a deadline. Often we'd be sort of sat in a room and our tutor would say to us, right, you need to sit down and write something in an hour. And then we also would gain quite a thick skin from doing that, because we'd actually critique each other's work, and you got used to kind of understanding that not everybody likes your writing, and that's absolutely fine. That's very much sort of someone's subjective and objective taste. So, lots of things I learned, but lots of things that have been hugely new.
Are you a good reader of your own material, or when you read, or is your mind constantly going that, you know, I could have changed this or that, and this would have made something different to me?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think definitely once you've had time away from the manuscript, that's kind of very humbling in some ways. I think once you've sort of had a month or two away, if you have the time in the schedule to do that, there are definitely things I think you'd always change. I think any author is probably their biggest critic as well. So there's things I'd change, but yeah, it's kind of something you have to accept. I think with any book, you'd probably take 1 or 2 years away from it and think, I could have done that differently. So yeah, you have to go with it.
Are you still used to reading reviews, or do you read your own press?
Yeah, I kind of, very much with reviews, I read them, because I personally sort of find them quite helpful. I think there's definitely, if you notice a sort of theme in reviews that kind of readers either haven't liked or picked up on, that's hugely helpful. And as I say, I think kind of, I've developed quite a thick skin sort of over the years, and I personally, there are books I like that my family doesn't like, so yeah, I've kind of got very used to that.
All right. Well, this book was just another fascinating read from Sarah Pierce. It's called The Retreat. It's a novel. It's available everywhere. And if you haven't read The Sanatorium, go pick that one up yet. You can read these in any order you want. Sarah, just a fantastic offering. And thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thanks so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. No retreat, hey.